Welcome, everyone. We are so glad that you're here today. Today is Mito Action's monthly expert series, and we are honored to have Dr. Sarah Chang, Medical Strategy Lead at UCB, with us to discuss understanding TK2D and the Kajevi approval. My name is Stephanie Harry. I'm the Patient Support Coordinator at Mito Action and will be your host for today. Today's presentation will be recorded and available on Mito Action's website in the coming days, as well as on our podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. We encourage you to ask questions throughout the presentation using the Q&A feature in the bottom menu bar of your screen. The chat section is for you to talk with other families and clinicians who are in this space today. Please note that although our presentation will be recorded and available after the presentation, our Q&A time will not, so you'll want to stick around for the Q&A time. In the last month, there's been a lot of buzz in our community about the approval of Kajevi. But what does this really mean for our Mito community? Today, Dr. Chang will discuss with us the basics of TK2D, including its genetic cause, symptoms, and how it's diagnosed. And will also give us an overview of Kajevi, including how it works and who may be eligible for treatment. Without further ado, I would like to introduce Dr. Sarah Chang. Dr. Chang is the Medical Strategy Lead at UCB, where she works on the TK2D program. TK2D is a rare life-threatening mitochondrial disease caused by changes in the TK2 gene. Sarah focuses on helping doctors recognize TK2D earlier and improving the path to diagnosis so patients can get the care that they need as soon as possible. She believes that every person, no matter how rare their condition, deserves timely care, meaningful support, and hope for a better future. Thank you so much for joining us today, Sarah. We are so excited for this presentation and look forward to learning all that you're going to share with us.
Well, thank you, Stephanie, for having me and for that introduction. I am going to go ahead and share my screen. And let me just make the slides bigger. Okay. Can you see those from your end? Perfect. Thank you. And hello, everyone on the line. Thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you to the Mito Action team for inviting us here today to talk about Kajevi, which is the first FDA-approved treatment for thymidine kinase 2 deficiency, or TK2D. As Stephanie mentioned, I am an employee as well as a stockholder in UCB. In terms of today's presentation, what we will do is begin by talking about what TK2D is and how it affects the body. Then we'll talk a little bit about how it's diagnosed, why genetic testing is so important, and how getting the right diagnosis can help care and support. Then we'll move into an overview of Kajevi. We'll talk about what it is, how it works in the body, and how researchers studied its safety and effectiveness. And then toward the end of the presentation, what I'll do is walk through some of the more practical aspects of treatment, so how to prepare and how to give Kajevi. Most of you already know that mitochondria are central to how the body makes energy. Mitochondria act like the cell's power plants or little batteries. They turn food and oxygen into the fuel that our bodies rely on. When they're working well, they keep important systems going, like muscle strength, breathing, and even keeping your heart beating. For families living with Mito disease, you've seen firsthand what happens when that energy production drops off. Everyday activities require more effort, muscles fatigue more quickly, and organs that rely heavily on energy, like the heart and lungs, can be affected. DNA is kind of the body's instruction manual. And this slide is here to explain why DNA matters so much in mitochondrial disease. All of our cells have DNA in the nucleus, but mitochondria also carry a small amount of their own DNA. And this mitochondrial DNA is directly tied to how well mitochondria can make energy. When there are certain mistakes or mutations in either the nuclear DNA or the mitochondrial DNA, the mitochondria can't always make energy the way they should. And when that energy production is disrupted, that's when symptoms of mitochondrial disease can show up. Things like muscle weakness, fatigue, problems in the lungs. This slide highlights something many of you might know from your own lived experiences, which is that mitochondrial diseases are rare, they're complicated, and they affect people in very different ways. Interestingly, even though individual mitochondrial diseases are very uncommon, when you group them all together, they have a prevalence of about 1 in 5,000 people, which isn't as uncommon as some may think. Mitochondrial diseases can have a huge impact because when the mitochondria don't make enough energy, cells, they just can't keep up with the demands of the body. And the parts of the body that use the most energy, brain, muscles, nerves, for example, are often the first to be affected. Some of the more common red flag symptoms that you see highlighted in pink on this slide include things you've probably seen or experienced yourselves. Severe fatigue, for example, feeling like your energy disappears quickly, muscle weakness, trouble with swallowing or walking, neurological symptoms, and this can be things like seizures, balance problems, or hearing issues. For infants, the early signs can be especially concerning, and they can include things like low muscle tone, not gaining strength as expected, or metabolic acidosis, where acid builds up because cells aren't making energy the way they should. The main message here is that mitochondrial diseases aren't just one condition, they're a whole spectrum. And even within the same diagnosis, symptoms can vary widely. That's why everyone's experience is different and why getting the right diagnosis can make such a big difference. Now we'll shift gears and talk more specifically about TK2d, which is one of the mitochondrial DNA depletion and deletion syndromes. And you might hear this called MDDS sometimes. What makes TK2d different from other mitochondrial diseases is where the problem starts. TK2d is caused by mutations or changes in the TK2 gene. This is a nuclear gene. So it's not on the mitochondrial genome, it's in the nucleus, and it normally makes an enzyme that helps the mitochondria create and repair their mitochondrial DNA. When this gene isn't working properly, the enzyme can't do its job well, and the mitochondria can't maintain the mitochondrial DNA that they need to function. And so without that healthy mitochondrial DNA, the mitochondria struggle to produce enough energy for the body. And that's why people with TK2d often experience muscle weakness. The big takeaway here is that TK2d involves the loss of mitochondrial DNA, which then impacts the muscles most. And this is a direct result of genetic mutations in the TK2 nuclear gene. TK2d can show up differently from person to person. For most people, muscle weakness is the most noticeable issue. It can start with things like trouble lifting the head, walking, breathing, or swallowing. And over time, these challenges can progress and they can make everyday activities like eating, talking, or moving around much, much harder. Some people also develop droopy eyelids. This is called ptosis. Or they can have difficulty chewing or swallowing because the muscles in the face and the throat tend to tire really easily. The lungs can be impacted, and that's because the breathing muscles need steady energy to work well. And this is why respiratory support often becomes a key part of care for many individuals living with TK2d. The nervous system can sometimes be affected, especially in younger children, and this can lead to developmental delays, seizures at times. And so, understanding this whole body impact can help families anticipate potential changes over time. And it also reinforces the need to work closely with the care team to stay ahead of symptoms. Now, because TK2d affects the body in so many different ways, most people need a team of specialists working together, not just one healthcare provider. This doesn't mean every person will see all of the providers listed on this slide. But it does mean that care often spans several areas of expertise. And although you see numbers on this slide, these specialists are not intended to be listed in any sort of priority order. Oftentimes, neuromuscular specialists are the anchor of the care team. Because TK2D primarily affects the muscles, especially the muscles needed for movement, swallowing, and breathing, neuromuscular doctors understand how these changes progress and how to manage them over time. They can guide decisions about physical therapy, respiratory support, mobility aids, and overall muscle health. For many families, the specialist becomes kind of the medical home base or the quarterback, if you will. Geneticists also play a crucial role. Since TK2D is caused by mutations in the TK2 gene, geneticists can help confirm the exact diagnosis, they can explain what that mutation means, and they can guide families on what to expect. They can also help identify if other family members may benefit from testing. And then, as treatments evolve, geneticists are essential in making sure the families know how therapy might fit with an underlying genetic cause. Many people with TK2D also work with pulmonologists or respiratory therapists to support breathing, especially since the breathing muscles can weaken over time. Feeding and nutrition are also central parts of care. Gastroenterologists, dieticians, they can help manage swallowing challenges, feeding tube needs, or specialized diets if they're required. On the movement side, we have orthopedic specialists, physical therapists, and occupational therapists, and they work to help maintain mobility, strength, comfort, and independence for as long as possible. They focus a lot on practical solutions, like adapting how someone might move, how they eat, how they use their hands. So daily tasks become more manageable. And of course, pediatricians or primary care doctors help keep an eye on overall health and preventive care. At the end of the day, you don't need to manage TK2D alone, and you shouldn't feel like you have to be the expert in every part of the body. There's a coordinated care team out there to help make sure that every system is getting the attention it needs and that your care plan evolves as your needs change. TK2D has a profound impact on both physical as well as mental health. It affects people of all ages, regardless of when symptoms begin. What you're looking at on this slide are findings from the Assessment of TK2D Patient Perspective Study, or ATP study, which consisted of a survey of 32 people living with TK2D, and it's the largest study of its kind. If you focus your attention on the right-hand side of the slide, on the chart, you can see that the survey data showed that basic activities of daily living, respiratory function, and development are among the most commonly affected areas. And if you now look at the bottom of the slide, you see a quote. And this is from a young adult who has TK2D who shared with us, "It is difficult to see my physical strength diminish and feel like I'm losing independence. There are normal day-to-day activities that require extra planning, and it's overwhelming." So, in summary, this disease is a lot to live with for patients, both emotionally as well as physically. The ATP study also surveyed 16 caregivers and found that caring for someone with TK2D also creates emotional and physical strain, as well as financial strain. It touches nearly every area of day-to-day life for these caregivers. The greatest strain occurs when medical equipment is needed at home. And if you look toward the left of the slide, you can see that a large majority, nearly 88% of caregivers, reported needing medical equipment in their homes to help with things like breathing, feeding, or mobility. This creates a constant need for hands-on care. If you look to the right-hand side of the slide, what you see is that caregivers reported the biggest negative impact on their social and leisure activities. What this means for them is fewer chances to relax, to see friends, or take personal time. About three quarters of caregivers said their work or school life is affected, and the same percentage reported a financial impact. And I think this shows how TK2D caregiving can really reshape a family's stability. A caregiver in the study at the bottom of the slide shared a positive quote, and it's that asking for help and leaning on others is a sign of strength. And that sharing experiences builds meaningful connections. So it's really important to connect with the community and with others and know that you're not alone in this journey. TK2D can only be diagnosed with genetic testing. And this is a really important point to understand. So even though symptoms might strongly point toward TK2D, I didn't show you a slide here today, but I will add that there are a lot of other diseases out there that present with that or that look like neuromuscular diseases. So things like spinal muscular atrophy, Duchenne muscular dystrophy, Pompe disease, for example, other mitochondrial myopathies that look like TK2D, but they are not TK2D. TK2D is defined by a genetic mutation. Therefore, genetic testing is the way to get to that diagnosis. And importantly, genetic testing technology has improved quite a bit in years. There are some older tests that are out there and that might have missed important information. So if you have an older test and you have signs or symptoms of TK2D, there are newer tests out there that might be able to uncover new information. If you look to the right-hand side of the slide, what you see is that there are a few different kinds of genetic tests that can find TK2D. Whole exome or whole genome sequencing. These are tests that look at most or all of your genes. Multi-gene panels look at a group of genes. It's important to make sure, though, that this panel includes the TK2 gene, and that's something that your healthcare provider would be able to look into. And then lastly, single gene testing, which looks specifically at the TK2 gene. And your doctor or your genetic counselor would help choose the right test based on symptoms and what's been done before. If TK2D is suspected, genetic testing is essential. It gives clarity, it guides care, and it opens the door to potential treatment. TK2D can affect muscles used for breathing, eating, moving, and speaking. So it's common for people to need extra support in these areas. The good news is that once TK2D is diagnosed, healthcare teams have several ways to help manage symptoms and improve comfort and safety. Doctors might recommend devices to help with breathing, mobility, nutrition, communication, and daily activities so people can stay safer and more comfortable. Different people may need different types of support. There's definitely no one size fits all, and you would work with your healthcare team to decide which devices are needed and when. On November 3rd of 2025, so just a few months ago, Kygevvi became the first FDA-approved treatment for people living with TK2D. What I will do over the next couple of slides is talk about how Kygevvi works and how it was studied, and then we'll end on how it is administered. Kygevvi is a combination of two pyrimidine nucleosides, and these are called doxycycline and doxribtimine. Pyrimidine nucleosides are small building blocks, and they help make DNA. They're important for mitochondrial DNA to replicate and to function properly. People with TK2D have less mitochondrial DNA. So if you recall from the earlier slide that I showed, TK2D is a disease of mitochondrial depletion and deletion, so there's less of it. Kygevvi is thought to work by incorporating the pyrimidine nucleosides, so those building blocks, into the mitochondria. And when we looked at mouse studies, what we saw is that Kygevvi was shown to restore mitochondrial DNA copy number. So who can take Kygevvi? Kygevvi is a treatment made specifically for people living with TK2D as long as their symptoms began at age 12 years or younger. And this includes both children as well as adults who had early onset symptoms. So what that means, you could be 40 years old and just received your genetic diagnosis, but you had symptoms that started before the age of 12, maybe at 5 years old. That would still qualify as symptom onset on or before 12 years, even though your genetic diagnosis might have taken place much later. So, diagnosis and symptom onset are not the same thing. Kygevvi itself comes as a powder that's mixed with room temperature water. It's taken by mouth or through a feeding tube. We'll go through these details in greater depth shortly. Each day's dose is divided into three equal amounts, taken about 6 hours apart with food. And it's important to note that an adult should prepare and give the doses to make sure everything is measured and given safely. Now we'll talk about how Kygevvi was studied in our clinical trial. But first, why was this study done? This study was done for three main reasons. First, researchers wanted to better understand TK2d, how it affects the body, how it changes over time. Second, the study looked at how Kajabi works in people living with TK2d so we could learn whether it helps with their disease. And then finally, the goal of all of this work is to improve care for people with TK2d to make sure that future treatment, support, and guidance are based on solid evidence. This slide explains who was included in the study that looked at Kajabi. Researchers compared two groups of people with TK2d, one group that received Kajabi and another group that did not. Each group included 78 people, and both groups had the same key features. So everyone had a confirmed genetic diagnosis of TK2d, and everyone's symptoms began at age 12 or younger. The main difference between the two groups was that the one group received treatment and the other did not. In terms of study design, each person in the treated group was matched with someone from the untreated group who had symptoms that began around the same age. That way, the comparison was fair. So if someone's symptoms started very early, before age two, for example, they were compared with someone else whose symptoms also began that early. For the people who were treated, I'm now looking at the blue on the left-hand side of the slide. Researchers gathered information from several places. These included medical records, an open-label clinical trial, and an expanded access program. These sources helped them understand what happened over time while people were receiving treatment. And then on the right in gray, for the people who didn't receive treatment, researchers used medical records and published medical literature. And this helped them find the people with TK2d who never received therapy. In the study, the median duration of treatment was 4 years, but some patients were treated for just one day, others for up to 12 years. The median is simply the middle number in a group of people's experiences. And the big question, shown in dark blue, the researchers asked was very simple. So, how long did people with TK2d live in each group? But before we go over the results, what I'd like to do is help you get a sense of who were these 78 people receiving treatment. First, we'll look at gender on the left. About half of the people in the study were male, and about half were female. So, this tells us TK2d affects both male and female genders about equally. And now we can look at racial and ethnic backgrounds. Most participants were identified as white, and there were also people identified as Black or African American, Asian, American Indian, or Alaska Native, and other racial backgrounds. The study also showed that over one-third of participants were Hispanic or Latino. The median age when symptoms first appeared in this group was about 1.5 years old, but the range was from shortly after birth up to age 12. This means that some people showed symptoms very early on in life, while others didn't develop symptoms until later in childhood. And we already talked about the median treatment duration of 4 years on the previous slide. I think at the end of the day, understanding who was included in this study really helps us put the results into context. These are real families and real children living with TK2D, and their experiences helped us learn more about the disease and how to support people affected by it. What are the possible side effects of Kajabi? In general, Kajabi was well tolerated. The most common side effects included diarrhea, stomach pain, including pain in the upper stomach area, vomiting, and an increase in liver enzymes. If you or your child ever experience any side effects, it's important to reach out to your doctor. They can help decide what steps to take next. You can also report side effects to UCB Cares at the number shown on this slide. Some people taking Kajabi experience liver-related or stomach-related side effects, and this slide explains what to look out for and when to call your healthcare provider. First, the liver side effects. Your provider will do regular blood tests before and during treatment to check your liver enzyme levels. If your liver shows signs of stress, your doctor might adjust or pause treatment. It's important to contact your healthcare provider right away if you notice any signs or symptoms like loss of appetite, pain on the right side of your belly, dark urine, yellowing of the skin or eyes, nausea, vomiting, or itching. Some people had diarrhea or vomiting while taking Kygevvi. If these symptoms last more than a few days, it's important to call your healthcare provider so they can help manage it before you get dehydrated or perhaps feel worse. The most important thing to remember is that you're not expected to figure this out alone. If you see any of these symptoms, reach out to your healthcare provider to get the support that you need. This slide now highlights our key study results, which showed that from the time of treatment start, people with TK2d who took Kygevvi lived longer than people who did not receive treatment. In the group treated with Kygevvi, 96% of people were still alive at the end of the study. In the group that did not receive treatment, 64% were still alive at the end of the study. And while every person's experience is unique, these results show that Kygevvi has the potential to make a meaningful difference for people living with TK2D. So, on this slide and the next, what I'll do is get into the more practical aspects of Kygevvi. So, how is it taken every day? What does the administration kit look like? Kygevvi, as I've mentioned, is an oral solution that needs to be taken 3 times a day in equally divided doses, with each dose spaced about 6 hours apart. The dose itself is based on weight, and your doctor would slowly increase the amount over time to make sure it's well tolerated. The treatment starts with a lower dose and then increases after a couple of weeks based on tolerability and increases again until you reach the full maintenance dose. If a dose is ever missed, you would take it as soon as you remember, unless you're within 2 hours of the next scheduled dose. In that case, you would skip the missed dose and just take the next one as planned. The goal is steady, consistent dosing throughout the day. On this slide, I'll walk you through how Kygevvi is prepared each day. First, it's important to know that only an adult should prepare Kygevvi, and each morning, you would prepare a full 1 day supply using the items that come in the administration kit. And that's shown on the right-hand side. And so it includes a mixing bottle, a dosing cup, oral syringes, and spare seals. And so each morning you would start by gathering the number of Kygevvi packets that you need for that day's total dose. Your healthcare provider would tell you what this number is. You wouldn't have to calculate it yourself. And then next, you would add 40 milliliters of room temperature water for each packet that you're using into the mixing bottle. Again, your healthcare provider would tell you how much water. You would then pour the powder from the packets into the mixing bottle, screw the dosing cap on, gently invert the bottle back and forth at least 20 times. If you still see powder that hasn't dissolved, you would just repeat that gentle mixing until it's fully dissolved. It's normal if the solution looks a little cloudy or if you notice some residual powder. Those are just inactive ingredients. Your healthcare provider or your pharmacist can walk you through this the first time, and it will get easier with practice. So if you ever feel unsure about any of these steps, it's completely okay to ask for help or for clarification. This slide now walks through the steps for giving each dose, whether you're taking it by mouth or through a feeding tube. Oops. Sorry. So before each dose, you would start by gently turning the mixing bottle upside down and back again at least 3 times. This helps make sure the medication is well mixed. You can give Kygevvi using either the dosing cup or the oral syringe that you saw in the previous slide. Your healthcare team would help you choose the method that works best for you or your child. Each day's total amount would be divided into 3 doses, taken about 6 hours apart with food. If a dose is spit out or not kept down, don't give another dose right away. Just wait and take the next scheduled dose at the regular time. Give Kygevvi through a feeding tube. I'm now looking at the right-hand side of the slide. You would follow the instructions from the feeding tube manufacturer to prepare that tube. You would draw up the Kygevvi solution using the syringe that works with your feeding tube, and then give the dose right away through the tube, flushing afterwards with water. And that flushing just makes sure the full dose goes through and keeps the tube clear. Any leftover Kygevvi solution should be thrown out 16 hours after you make it, or once the three doses have been taken, whichever one of those happens first. And I know there's a lot of information on this slide and the previous slide, a lot of text. Just know it will get easier with practice, and you can always reach out to your care team for support. So, in summary, PKU2D is a rare genetic mitochondrial disease. It results in muscle weakness. Kygevvi can cause side effects. The most common ones we saw in the study were diarrhea, stomach pain, vomiting, and higher liver enzyme levels. Your doctor would keep an eye on these and help manage them if they come up. Kygevvi improves survival from treatment initiation in children and adults with TK2D with symptom onset on or before 12 years. And then lastly, Kygevvi needs to be taken 3 times a day in evenly spaced doses. And I just want to close by thanking everyone for joining us today. And also a heartfelt thank you to the patients, the families, the physicians who made this milestone possible. Your strength, your openness, and your partnership have been at the center of all of the progress we've made with Kygevvi, and none of this would exist without you. I also want to extend a special thank you to the team at MitoAction, your commitment to supporting the mitochondrial disease community, and for bringing us together today really helps families stay informed, helps them stay empowered as treatment options continue to evolve. I also want to send a special shout out to Christy Balcells, who works with me, or who I have the pleasure of working with at UCB. She's our patient engagement lead. I know a lot of you know her. Christy is the mom of a child with a mitochondrial disease, and she has worked hand in hand on the content for this slide deck to make it appropriate for the patient community. And Christy internally has taught all of us at UCB a lot about mitochondrial diseases and really helped us keep our focus on the patients with everything that we do. And with that, I will stop sharing and turn things over actually to Christy next, I believe.
Thank you, Sarah, and for everybody who's listening. This really is a partnership, and I do tell our team and I share with you guys that we're pioneers together in this space with this opportunity to have a treatment option available for people with TK2D. And I wanted to say, if you're not already involved, we'd love for you to be more involved. And you can be involved by reaching out to Stephanie and Kyra and just letting them know that you have TK2D and that you want to be more involved. You could reach out to me directly and I'll put my email address in the chat and I'll say it here also. But this year we'll celebrate the 5th TK2D Tuesday, which is the Tuesday before Mito Awareness Week. So that this year it's Tuesday, September 8th. And, it's an opportunity to raise awareness as a worldwide community, and there's really no greater impact than when you guys, the people who live with or care for people with this condition, share a little bit of your story. I've learned by working in the pharma space that the stories that you share have such a tremendous impact, far greater than the people that you know. I mean, really, there are people all over the world who might see something that you share about your life, and it turns light bulbs on in terms of helping them to really understand what that means when someone says TK2D is associated with muscle weakness. When Sarah mentioned earlier in the presentation, the ATP study, that was the assessment of TK2D patient perspectives. And I thank, MitoAction for being part of our steering committee to help us put this project together. And for those of you that participated, I thank you because that is the largest quality of life survey and project that's ever been done in TK2D. And we hope to see a publication for that in a peer-reviewed journal in the coming months. But it helps all people, clinicians, patient groups, people who make decisions about healthcare and access to just better understand what that experience is like. And I also just want to remind everybody that tk2d.com is in English and in Spanish, because we have recognized that there are a number of our families here in the United States, even who prefer to have Spanish as their first language. So many of the resources and materials are available also in Spanish. But that's another reason to reach out, because really we feel like this is an opportunity. We want to be able to listen to what your needs are and partner with organizations like Mito Action to be making a difference. So I'll share my email if that's okay, Stephanie, and I'll put it in the chat as well. But it's Christy, Christy dot Balcells, Balcells at UCB.com. And I'll put that in the chat as well. But thank you, everybody. And I hope to hear from you. And I would love to also be a part of some of the disease awareness efforts for TK2D Tuesday. So Kyra, I'll pass it to you.
Thank you, Christy. Christy, it's Sarah and Christy again. I just want to extend our thanks to you guys and the UCB team. I mean, this has been an incredible year. So many huge milestones that we've created together as a community, and I just hope you and the UCB team know how incredibly grateful we are for your unwavering support of this community. We couldn't do it all without you. So I just want to briefly jump on and share with you and make sure everyone on here knows about the tool that we have open for our TK2D community and any Mito patient, our My Mito app. And we don't call it a registry because it's so much more than that. It really is about community, helping our patients and families to manage their day-to-day, but while also providing incredible data that we can share with researchers and clinicians as we're developing new therapies and really understanding your journey. So this platform, it's available either in a desktop version or on your phone, and there is a version specifically for our TK2D community. And it allows you to track your real symptoms day to day. You can put in, you'll track them on a none mild, moderate, severe level. And you can see here, there's a graph where you can actually plot and see that. And for many of our Mito patients, you're not going to your doctor, on a monthly basis. You may see your Mito doc once a year. You can download all of this data and share this with your clinician, and it tells your story. And you think about these binders and the medical binders that so many patients are managing with all of the data. Well, now you have an opportunity to put it all in the palm of your hand through your app and create lived experiences for your data. So it makes it brings your data to life. And that de-identified data, we have a partnership with the CPATH Institute, and we share that data with researchers and clinicians who are studying TK2D and mitochondrial disease. And one of the other pieces that's of incredible value to our families is it creates a coordinated care environment. So you can invite your clinicians, your teachers, family members, everyone can be part of your app environment so that everybody has access to the same information. If you need help with appointments, all of that can be managed right here through this platform. And just to give you a screenshot, so here, right here, are your daily entries of your patient reported outcomes where you can track all of your symptoms and you can designate for you specifically what are the most meaningful things that you want to track. We have the ability to do telehealth visits directly through the platform. You can communicate not only with Mito Action, but most importantly, with other members of your community and talk and share ideas and connect to one another. And then again, here is the reporting that you can share that tells your story and helps you share your information as you're going to visit your clinician. And also, we have the ability to collect surveys. So we'll be able to collect really important information as we're better understanding what your needs are, what's important to you, so that we can not only develop programs, but we're sharing that with our industry partners. And so I would encourage you all to get on the My Mito platform. If you're interested in registering, you just go to www.mitoaction.org/mymito. And there's a link there. You fill out a form, you let us know what your type of Mito is, and it'll put you into the platform specific for you. And then we also can schedule one-on-one calls to help you get set up and make sure that you're using it properly. So I would encourage everybody that is part of the TD community, and all that always tongue ties me, to join, and we're here to help support you and get you started. So I will turn it over now to Stephanie. Back to Stephanie for Q&A.
All right. Thank you so much, everybody. We are so excited that you're here, and we are going to go ahead and start our Q&A.